static.
It's no good, Skipper. I don't know the code.
Don't give me excuses. Give me results.
This is Reverse Deception Radio on the Veritas Radio Network, Crusade Channel.
I don't think I've ever seen anything quite like this before.
I'm telling you, that dude just gives me the heebie-jeebies.
One of the most important things I tell folks, don't pay for something you can get for free. Like if you want to get hacked by a bad guy, don't pay the hackers to do it. Let them do it for free. And you're saying to yourself, Greg, what are you talking about? Nobody wants to get hacked. Au contraire, there are some people that are just dying to get hacked. Just dying to get hacked. Why? Because they don't look, they're not watching out for themselves. They're not taking care of themselves. They're not engaging in due diligence. They are arbitrarily doing things, and it's going to come back and it's going to bite them real hard. From security intelligence, are mobile apps really at risk? So what's a mobile app? Mobile app are a number of the applications that you download from the iTunes store, the Google Play store, the Windows store. All of these places have these apps, and you've seen them. Right? You've seen Tetris. You've seen banking apps. You've seen Subway Surfers. I'm sure everybody's got a copy of that, right? Well, some of them are real and some of them are fake. And people are spending a lot of money on these fake apps. And what's the problem with a fake app or a knockoff app? Well, some are made by companies that are just looking to make some money, but others are made by hackers. Hackers have a copy of 77% of all of the apps out there that are used on your phone. Think about that for a minute. You have a better chance of purchasing an app that's a fake than an app that is real. So what's the problem with a fake app? Not too much. Sometimes you get a good deal, but for the most part, you're not going to get a good deal. 70% of the apps categorized under games, books, references, and live wallpapers, 70% of them are fake. How's that number grab you? Widgets, media and video apps, different types of lifestyle apps, financing apps, travel, leisure apps, and different types of tools, things you want to use to update your the speed for your phones, the amount of data that's backed up on your phone, things like that that you know people say that will make your phone run better, run faster. 100% of those apps are copied with fakes. Shopping apps, business apps, music, audio, photography apps, weather apps, transportation, productivity, newspaper, magazine apps, health and fitness apps, entertainment apps. All of these are at least 70, most of them are about 90% copied. 90% fake. Think about that for a minute. You're getting scammed at a 90 to 100% rate, and you don't even know it. So what's the overall malicious to non-malicious ratio? 51% malicious apps, 49% non-malicious. So overall, out of the 800 and something thousand apps that are created every year, at least 400,000 of those are fake. Or they'll damage your phone, steal your information, or whatever. A lot of the apps that are used are ones that purport to help you or protect your phone. There's an app called Virus Shield. Has a 4.7 star rating out of 5 on the iTunes store. It was the number one seller. And what did it do? Well, it definitely was a virus shield because it allowed the virus to come right into your phone and allowed the hacker to take administrative control over your phone, swiping everything. Everything that you had on your phone. And it would also link them up to your network, too, if you connected through the Wi-Fi in your house. All that damage for a mere 99 cents per person. Most targeted was iOS. Second most targeted was Android. Any surprises there? No, not really. It makes you think for a second. all those folks who say that their Mac computer is safer, right? Because security is better on a Mac than it is on a PC. No, it's not. Market share for Mac, maybe what, 2, 3, 4% at most, 10% possibly? I'm not really sure. So why would people waste a lot of time and effort on something that's only 5, 10% of the market share? It's not going to happen. You're going to go for economies of scale, and you're going to go for where the big bucks are. All of the big corporations, most people in their houses are using PCs. That's where most of the information is. That's where most of the damage can be done. That's where the most of the money is to be made. So from one big nightmare to another, this from Ars Technica, or technical art in Latin, critical Qualcomm security bug leaves many phones open to attack. This vulnerability has been in place for over 5 years and has left Android phones unsecure. The users have had text messages, call history, other sensitive data just taken from their phones, and there's been nothing done about it. There's a good possibility it's been known for a while, too. The article says the flaw, which is most severe in Android version 4.3 and earlier, allows low-privileged apps, not people, low-privileged apps. These are the ones that don't necessarily need to use your location, access your bank accounts, things like that. Low privilege. To access sensitive data that's supposed to be off limits. According to a blog post published by security firm FireEye. But instead, the data is available by invoking permissions that are already requested by millions of apps available in Google Play. The researchers said that vulnerabilities can also be exploited by adversaries who gain physical access to an unlocked handset. Pardon me, but if I have physical access to an unlocked handset, all you have to do is rock and roll. Physical access is everything. Think about that next time you don't lock your phone. And don't use that really cool password, 1234. We had a password show back not that long ago. Remember password? Password was good. Password with a zero instead of an O was another good one. Solo. There are tons of lousy passwords. Baseball, football, 1234567, 1234567878. Come on, folks. Make it a little bit challenging, please. You realize that you can lock yourself out of your iPhone after 10 attempts or 9 attempts if you get the password wrong, but a hacker can get into that phone even if you've locked yourself out of it. Do you realize how ridiculous that is? You, the person who's requiring legitimate access to your personal information on your personal device, can't get in, but somebody else can. It's just unreal. The vulnerability was patched in the Android security patch Google released on May 1st of this year, 2016. A Google representative said Nexus devices were never affected. Really? Still, a large portion of Android users are unable to receive monthly patches because of restrictions imposed by carriers or manufacturers. So this is going to take us into something that we talk about in the IT world quite a bit. Updates and patches. A patch is just a software fix for something that has a known vulnerability. Patches usually come out in between new version or new release updates. Patches focus on one or two things. That's it. And they're very specific. Please, I'll say it again. Please update your software. Please update your software. If a patch comes out, it's because there's a vulnerability that's known. If you don't patch and the vulnerability is known, then you have one very current reason to be upset, because the hacker is going to walk right in and they're going to use that vulnerability, and it's going to be a current vulnerability. So it'll be around for a long time until you decide to patch it. And by then, folks, you're even further down the road and you haven't patched the next vulnerability that's come out or the next one. All the hacker needs is one shot at getting in. You have to be perfect every time on the defensive side, but a hacker needs one time to get in, and bam, they can have a permanent presence on your system every single time. And because the manufacturers and the carriers don't push the patches out or don't allow you to patch in a certain way, can you see how they are part of the problem? Do you think they're perpetuating? I think they are. They're trying to help the antivirus companies, aren't they? Going to keep them in business. You ever notice these days that when you purchase a computer, when you buy an operating system, or when you sign up with the company that's giving you internet access, There's usually what? There's usually a software package for antivirus, isn't there? See, they're bundling on you again. Remember we talked about bundling before? Right, as soon as you start to get bundled, you're getting bungled. Don't fall for it. Take that garbage off, because what they're giving you is a crappy package 99% of the time. Get the stuff I told you about. Get Avast, get Panda, something like that that's free and something that's good, that has resilience to it. A lot of the packages that you get these days have no resilience. They're flat. They got no personality. How about that? And you want your antivirus software to have a personality, don't you? We all do. Well, from personality to insanity, let's go to futurism.com. Sony's smart contact lenses can record what you see. So we're going to just take this. I'm not going to read the whole article. You got it though, didn't you? The contact lenses you can put in now are going to record everything you see during the course of a day. Wouldn't it be great if it could record your dreams too? When you're going through your rapid eye movement, your REM sleep, and then into your deep sleep cycles, that would be great. But unfortunately, all it's going to do is record things during the day when your eyes are open and actually you're actually recording the images through your eyes, through the optic nerve, where it's going to get scrambled in your brain into something that looks like something else, some type of reality. Well, kind of like, you know, running off and being crazy, and it's not necessarily your reality or somebody else's. Maybe I can explain it like this.
Leave her. Come back to Montana with me.
I can no sooner run away from her than myself.
Hey,
what are you saying?
Leave her. Come back to Montana with me.
I can no more run away from her than I can run away from myself.
I'm not asking you to run. I'm asking you to face reality.
Whose reality? Yours or mine?
My reality and yours. That's whose?
What are you saying?
That's it. Reality is just reality, I guess. So you're going to record everything that you see in the course of a day. Behooves you to probably stay awake. It works through the blinks and it works through the sneezes. It's designed to actually pause for when you're blinking or when you're sneezing, something like that, anytime you bat your eyes. So if you could think for a minute of going into a business meeting where you are viewing proprietary information, all you have to do is view it. Now you've recorded it. Now we have problems with our information security, don't we? We've always had problems, but this is just of biblical proportions. Everything you see, you just walk through a museum, you can collect all the information that's up in front of every screen that you see, with every animal that you see, with every artifact that you see. Everything, it's all encompassing. If you're just joining us, this is Greg Carpenter, Reverse Deception Radio on the Veritas Radio Network. Right now, we're talking about how Sony has created contact lenses that will collect everything you see in the course of a day. We were talking about how most of the apps that you see are fake apps. They're designed by hackers to collect your information. Folks, we've got an information security problem like unbelievable. Information's going out the door left and right, and people can't stop it. With this new Sony smart contact lens, you know, people that work in a secure area that have proprietary information for their company, maybe you're working on a patent, maybe you're working on something at home, your financials. What happens every time you look at your social security number, your bank account number? What if hackers hacked the Sony smart contact lenses and were collecting everything you saw? When you got home at the end of the day, when you got together with your family, they'd know exactly where you live, the security system at your house, the punch code that you use to punch in to get into your house, right? They'd know the combination on that safe that you have, combination on your door for your car, maybe. They'd have everything about you. This is insane. And we're going to promote this because this is a good thing. We got to have these. Did you ever think at one point in your life that maybe there's too much technology, that it's going to take a wrong turn? Or maybe it has been taking a wrong turn the whole time, and we just didn't realize it. Was the automobile good? Did it really do what it was supposed to do? Did it really help us so much? Or did it not help us so much? Planes, did planes help us? Did they hinder us? How about computers? Have computers really helped us, or have they become such a burden? How about that email you use every day? In the 80s, how long did it take to send one email? What, 4, 5, 10 minutes or so? You'd scoff at that today. You could shoot out 15, 20, 30, maybe even 40 emails in 5 minutes. It's not about quality, is it? It certainly can't be, because look at how we speak. Do we speak intelligibly any longer? No, we don't. Do we use proper English? No, I can't say that we do. We've dumbed down everything that we do. It's a 7-second hook. 7 seconds for a hook and 7 seconds for a loss. You're chatting with your friends. How long does it take you? 140 characters. That's all it takes sometimes, right? And what happens when you're chatting on Facebook? Do you use real words? Do you spell them out? Or do you do like these artists in these songs? Do you use titles suggested by our 4 bald, middle-aged, Caucasian, Norwegian friends who write 90% of the songs out there that you hear on pop radio? No, I would highly suggest you use a real word instead of all of these shortcuts. Challenge your mind, use your mind, because the more you use your brain, the more synapses will form. The stronger they will become, the longer, the better your memory will be. Now, where's that next article? I had it around here somewhere. I know it's here somewhere. Ah, yes. Newly discovered planets may host infrared-based life. What is infrared-based life? Well, that's life that doesn't need the light that we use out of the regular spectrum. It uses infrared waves to live. And where, by chance, could something like this actually happen? Scientists have found planets that could possibly house alien life, and they're only 40 light years away from Earth. Realistically, that's in our backyard, folks. 40 light years is not far in the grand scheme of things. This is the first time these three planets were detected, thanks to the Transiting Planets and Planetesimal Small Telescope. That's a mouthful, isn't it? The newly discovered trio of planets with temperatures and sizes comparable to those of Earth and Venus certainly have scientists talking. In fact, these three worlds are now considered the best targets for the search for life outside of our solar system. Think about that for a minute. These planets are so close, we're looking sometimes 100, 200, 300, 1,000, 10,000, a billion light years away at different occurrences and things that are happening. This is 40 light years away. How long ago do you think, put on your thinking caps now, how long ago do you think scientists actually, I mean really, really deep down inside, really found these planets? Do you think it was yesterday, a week ago, a week and 2 days, a year, 5 years, 20 years, 50 years ago? Realistically, if we're looking at something that's only 40 light years away, that's something that should have been mapped or was mapped in space years ago. And now we're starting to look at it. Now we can estimate or evaluate that it's similar to our atmosphere in such a way that it could host life. But infrared-based life at that, not necessarily life like we know it. Of course, there's a lot of conjecture on the part of scientists that certain life forms could live off of ammonia by itself without water, not necessarily carbon-based, but that life existed and that these life forms lived off of ammonia. Is it possible? Is it probable? Something for you to think about. And this article is an interesting article in the fact that talking about life so close to us, but yet it's taken us so many years to actually identify that these three planets are similar to our atmosphere. And they said they're like us and like Venus. Well, heck, as far as I know, Venus sucks. I wouldn't want to go there. Why haven't we sent anything to Venus? Venus sucks. Right. We go to Mars. Why are we going to Mars? You ever think of the real reason why we're going to Mars? Why did we go to the moon? What, because JFK said we were going to go to the moon? Is that why we went to the moon? Logically, think about that. Did we really prove a point by landing on the moon? Did we really prove a point by sending something to Mars? Or are we looking for stuff? What do you think? Who invests all this money just to say, hey, I got a bigger rocket than you? If that's not the verge of idiocracy, I don't know what is. No, we're going there for something, folks. What are we going there for? There's a reason for it. Follow the money. Are we looking for resources? Are we looking for renewable energy? Oh, my goodness. And I don't mean, are we going to put windmills on the moon? Or are we going to placard it with solar panels? No. Looking to create a renewable energy form in zero gravity. That is where the interesting part of science comes in. Not how many solar panels can I make today and stick up there. At the efficiency rate of a solar panel, you're going to need solar panel the state of New Mexico just to heck heat up and keep New York City running. That's how good they are. And windmills, let's see, 16th century technology, updated a little bit, still costs about 6 times more than coal to produce. I'm thinking not viable. But hey, that's just me talking. So I think we're going to close out the segment of the show here with Google gains access to millions of private medical records for new app.
Wow.
Google's DeepMind there's a company owned by Google called DeepMind, okay? Google's DeepMind's new app, Streams, hopes to use patient data to monitor kidney disease patients. That's a good thing. In the process, they gained confidential data on more than 1.6 million patients, and people are not happy. According to the company, the data was necessary to develop the app called Streams, which would help hospital staff monitor kidney disease patients. Associate Medical Director for Patient Safety at the Royal Free Hospital in London, Dr. Lang, said, "Using Streams meant I was able to review blood tests for patients at risk of AKI within seconds of them becoming available. I intervened earlier and was able to improve the care of over half the patients Streams identified in our pilot studies." Now, this sounds great, but the concerns lie in exactly what kind of data Google has access to. There are no separate statistics available for people with kidney conditions, so the company was given access to all data, including HIV test results, details about abortions, and drug overdoses. As a matter of fact, Google got access to everything: STD tests, medications, treatments, inpatient, psychiatric, you name it, they had it. And if you think for 1 minute that it was limited to 1.6 million records, boy, have I got a bridge to sell for you back home in Brooklyn. That's a good one. So in response to some of the concerns that they had about sharing information, right, the Royal Free Trust said that the data is going to remain encrypted so the Google staff should not be able to identify anyone. Look at the conditional use of the word should, shall we? It's always an eyebrow raiser when a statement is made and someone is using a modal auxiliary verb instead of making a definitive statement. The encryption will protect the records from Google employees seeing everything happening. See how that's different? The encryption should protect. Big difference in application, isn't it? Never use a modal verb unless you really mean you want to use a modal verb. I could, I should, I would, maybe I can, perhaps I won't. Modal auxiliary verbs. Liars helpers since the 1600s. This is Gregory Carpenter.
We're giving you 5 minutes to gather the Pentagon-sized pile of scales that's fallen from your eyes. Reverse Deception. We'll be right back on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.